I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 217 of Low Limit Football on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network for this Monday, the 17th of September, 2018. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we put the international break back in our rearview mirror as we focus on the leagues, but not without a little drama first. We're going to definitely discuss that tonight. Zlatan Ibrahimovic scores his 500th goal, and he does it with style like only Ibra can do. And we start the Champions League and Europa League tomorrow with group play this week. We'll look at the top storylines with our very special guest, Mr. Oliver Stevenson, producer of Talk Sport and host of the Football 90 podcast, who will be joining us in about 15 minutes or so. Let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. What's going on, my man?
I'm doing well, Joe. How was your weekend?
Busy. Busy. You know, it's so funny when you're in the dead of winter, you always end up with stuff to do, and then when you're in the summer, you've always got stuff to do, and the spring, you've always got stuff to do, and the fall, you got stuff to do, and these weekends absolutely kill me because I would rather sit there and watch soccer more than I would yard work. You know what I mean?
I 100% agree with you.
But the grass gets tall, man, and you gotta cut it. So that's
what. Well, that grass won't be there longer. No. Before you know it, it'll all be white.
It'll be nice. Yeah, forget it. We're talking with my coworkers today. We're talking about, you know what? What about just closing out our 401ks, taking the money, and buying a house like in Utila in Honduras, right? And
just, why Honduras?
Dude, it's beautiful there.
But you know what they say about that, though.
I don't care what they say. All I know is that it's sunny, it's warm, there's palm trees, and you can buy a house on the beach for $200,000. I'm good with that.
I think you're good with any Central American or Caribbean country, that's for sure.
You bet your life I am. But I got to go to work tomorrow, so that's how it goes. How about you, sir? How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was very busy. I mean, you kind of did see, there were a lot of interesting games this weekend. Obviously, the Champions League is back tomorrow, finally. But we do have some situations that, at least what we saw on Sunday night, we finally see our beloved Portuguese model superstar slash whatever he might be in the future finally score.
Yes, he did. He broke through on what would only be considered a non-Cristiano goal, don't you think?
I think on the first one. Yeah, the second one's a different story. The
second one was more of a redemption. It was a beautiful goal, nice slotted to the far post. But the first one was picking up the deflection. But, at that point, I don't think it would have mattered. As long as he put one in the back of the net, I think he would have been ecstatic. And you saw, like I told you when the game started, that if he scores, the place was going to erupt, and they absolutely did. So,
yes, it did.
And that's really Cristiano Ronaldo scoring is bad news for not only everybody in Italy, but everybody in the world, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah, it's a big problem. So let's get to it. I know we got a lot to talk about tonight. We also got to talk about something else that happened in that game that we're going to talk about in just a minute. But
it is your honor for trivia tonight, sir, and I'd like you to get at it.
All right, so we'll keep into the conversation of the Champions League and of Cristiano Ronaldo with this question. Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo both hold the record for the most goals in UEFA Champions League group stage history. They both have 60 goals apiece. Can you name the other two to make up that top four?
Ooh.
And just a hint, none of them play it anymore.
None of them play anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to write down one name, and I'm just gonna put this in my brain for a second. Because it's got to be, oh, it could be this guy.
Okay. He's usually on the, I'll give you one more hint. He's usually on the list of top goal scorers in Champions League history, so that should help you a little bit.
It does. Oh, there's another name. I'm going to write this down. This name down too, and I'm going to write down. I have four names that I want to give you two of them. So,
okay.
I will come back to that a little later on.
Yes, sir.
So let's do opening thoughts tonight. And opening thoughts is an ugly. I guess ugly is the best way to describe it, right?
Despicable, disgusting, any synonym of that word. Yeah, it was bad.
And it's the Douglas Costa incident yesterday where he spit in the face of Federico Di Francesco of Sassuolo.
Who is also, sorry, Joe, who's actually the son of Eusebio Di Francesco.
Right. So, you know, just to go full circle back to Roma there. It was late, very late in the 2-1 win for Juve yesterday. Obviously, this is really overshadowing the brace for Cristiano Ronaldo yesterday. But whatever happened, there was a kind of a, you know, I've seen a bunch of replays. There was a big foul where Costa felt he got fouled by Di Francesco. They got back up. Costa then elbows Di Francesco in the head. He then headbutts him, and then as they exchange words, Douglas Costa spits in Di Francesco's mouth, prompting a red card finally and being thrown out of the match. Which it's amazing to me, first of all, that it's the spitting that got him the red card and not the elbow or the headbutt. But that's a discussion for officiating for another day. Rob, I'm gonna give you my reaction to this at first,
yep.
and we've seen a bunch of different reactions, from around the world come in on this one. We did see Alex Goldberg, who we had he's a huge guest, part of the Culture Land podcast. I'd love to hear what he and David Amoyal have to say about this a little later on. We've heard Aaron West, who's another great friend of the show, was a little more lenient. Alex was more like he needs to be suspended for 17 games. It was despicable. It was disgusting. Aaron West, kind of not that he took Douglas Costa's side, but he said you kind of got to know what was said in the heat of the moment between the two to prompt this, which I think does play into this a little bit. And I, before I even start to talk about this, I want to say he should be suspended. What he did is one of the most vile, despicable, disgusting things one human being could do to another, regardless of situation. Okay, it's not so much that there is the heat of the moment and the combat and then the battle on the pitch and that sort of thing. Forget all that. Okay, this is something that is absolutely disgusting. There's no place for it in humanity, let alone on a soccer field, on a football field, anywhere. I despise it. And this is something, you're talking to a guy that actually has been spit at before. I was a referee and I got spit at by a player. So I know what this, I know what being on the receiving end of this feels like. And that guy, you actually want to, it strips you of humanity to an extent. And you want to just literally take your fist and just pummel somebody in the face when they do that to you. Now, what Douglas Costa did was wrong. Now, do you want to give some merit to what DeFrancesco may have said to him? Maybe. You want to put that in there? You don't know what was said. I mean, we've seen Zidane throw away a World Cup based on what Marco Materazzi said to him, right? So, I know there's heat of the moment stuff there. I don't applaud. I don't condone the spitting. I just can't stand it. What I said to you, Rob, a little earlier was I would have preferred that if Douglas Costa, if DeFrancesco said something vile to Douglas Costa, something racially charged, something along those lines, I would have preferred that Douglas Costa punched him in the face repeatedly, okay? Because in the end, today, you and I would sit there and go, oh my God, Douglas Costa punched him in the face like multiple times. Bloody lip, bloody nose, swollen eye. And we would go, you know what? He called him the N-word on the field. Okay, well, I understand what he did, and I understand why he punched him in the face. And I'm not promoting violence, but I think the humanity portion of this is really stripped down when Douglas Costa spits at him. And he would have been better served if he was going to do some type of outward act of violence, that he would have been better served punching him in the face than spitting at him. Now, does he deserve 17 games like Alex was suggesting? That seems like a lot to me. Okay. But does he deserve at least 10? Does he deserve a couple months off? Does he maybe deserve to sit the bench till almost Christmas? Yeah, I could see that. I could understand that. You know, and I would support that. I think that is definitely appropriate. Now, does that wouldn't be 17 games, but I'm sure it would be close to 10, maybe 12, 13 games. And now you have to also ask the question, Rob, does just the Serie A punish him? Does just Juventus punish him? Does UEFA punish him? Who punishes him? How long is that punishment for? Does FIFA punish him? Because you're looking at all these governing bodies. Someone's going to come down on him. Many people are going to come down on him. To the level, I think, you could see this easily turn from he's got the appropriate amount of suspension and fines to that is over the top way too much, and then things will get cut down and kicked back the other way. So hopefully just the Serie A reacts. Hopefully they will suspend him 10, 12 games or so, and then we can move on. So that's my take on it, and I certainly don't support, and I'm a big Douglas Costa fan. I love the way he plays. I love him as a player, but I can't support. I can't authorize. I can't applaud anything that he did in that span of 30 seconds on yesterday's match, Rob. What about you?
Yeah, no, and just going back to what you said, if you do put in a 10-game suspension for Douglas Costa in the Serie A, it would have him all the way up to December.
So pretty close, you know, for him to be out until Christmas, I could totally understand that and support that.
Right. No, and going back to what I have to say, yeah, you also have to look at, because technically there is only one side to the story. Obviously the side that we obviously saw was the elbow, the supposed headbutt, and obviously the spinning, which, you know, I, for one, do not condemn whatsoever. I believe it's probably one of the most disgusting and atrocious things that anyone can do. You know, I'll repeat your sentiments, Joe, in saying that. You know, certainly you could make a case that if he had punched him or even kicked him to an extent, okay, we're not condemning violence, but certainly it's a bit more lenient than spitting into someone's mouth. And that's disgusting as a whole, even speaking about it. But just, you know, that whole idea could have been averted had he done perhaps something different. Now then, there has to be a reason for this, because I think, you know, for certainty, you don't just randomly spit at someone if something wasn't said. We know Douglas Costa. We know that his personality isn't as heated as one would think. So clearly there's one thing to say. I want to go back to the comments Allegri said, you know, wanting to punish him. You know, he said that he was irritated at a foul before, but it didn't matter because this absolutely must not happen. But let's go back to what Douglas Costa had to say in his Instagram post a few hours after that incident. And this is just what, he said. I want to apologize to all the Juventus fans for this over-the-top reaction I had during today's game. I also apologize to my teammates who are always by my side in good times and bad. It was ugly, I am aware of that, and I apologize to everyone for that. I want to make clear that this isolated conduct has nothing to do with what I have shown throughout my career. Now, Joe, obviously you would probably accept that if you're a Juventus fan because of this apology, but what's one thing that sticks out in that post?
He didn't apologize to DeFrancesco.
That, exactly.
Plain and simple. He didn't apologize to DeFrancesco, which also leads you to believe. I think I've also seen since then, I've seen another post about, you know, he kind of alludes to something that DeFrancesco said to him. He alludes to that there was something there. He doesn't say what was said. He doesn't go into detail. But he alludes to it, and I think whatever that reaction was between the elbow, and you could actually see, and I want to say Aaron West posted the video of the DeFrancesco foul on him.
Yep.
Where he kind of, he literally elbows him in the neck, he takes him out body-wise, and then he kind of almost steps next to him and looks at him and makes a motion at him, like almost like you're a baby, where he totally plowed him out.
Right.
And again, I'm not defending spitting.
Nope.
So, you know, but there was something there. There was some exchange of words there when he did get drilled on the foul. And then there was another exchange of words where it was he was prompted, you know, to spit at him. So, you know, it's I can't wrap my head around it. The only thing we have, Rob, to go and compare to it that was really, you know, as vile is probably what Luis Suarez did. Remember?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, biting a person. So I guess, you know, anything that you do with your mouth that is not verbal in retaliation. Or aggression, I think, should be heavily punished.
Right. Now, here's the big question. I'm going to ask you this before I get my take. If you're the Juventus brass, if you're, you know, Liga Serie A, if you're UEFA, if you're FIFA, what would be your final decision for Douglas Costa's suspension?
10, 12 games. Yeah, something like that. You know, and you and I talked about this a little bit yesterday.
All competition.
All activities. So, go home. Go home, come back December 1st, okay, or December 15th, or whatever.
Or beforehand, because if you can count the Champions League as well,
right.
Remember.
Whatever the number is, you know, so today's the 17th, he did it on the 16th.
Right, so I'll count it. I'll actually count it while you continue.
Just say come back on the 15th of December. You can come back to training with Juventus on the 15th of December. It's 2 months, right? It's a two-month ban. From all activities. So, no Champions League, no Coppa Italia, no Serie A, no practice,
No international call-up?
No international call-up, nothing. Nothing. 2 months, thanks for playing, and that's it.
Okay.
And like Alex would say, reptile out. You know, that would be my
punishment.
My punishment for it. How about you?
Yeah, I would say the same. 8 to 10 games, probably. If it's not a certain game, I would say month and a half, 2 months.
Okay. So, I mean, it's, you know, I think both of us in the end we're looking at a stiff punishment. You know, something harsh, something that's going to make a statement. But I think in the end, something that you know is reasonable. And I think that's the way it should be. So, you know, let's do this, Rob. While we're here chatting, let's bring our guest into the show. I'm very excited to actually have him on because he's been a big part of what you and I do, Rob. And that's Mr. Oliver Stevenson, producer from TalkSport and host of the Football 90 podcast. Oliver, I want to make sure I have you on.
Good evening. How are we? You okay?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you.
Good. So we've been talking about our opening thoughts topic tonight about the incident with Douglas Costa on the pitch yesterday, the spitting incident, you know, with the headbutting and everything else. And Rob and I think, feel that we want to see a stiff punishment for Douglas Costa, but nothing unreasonable where the different federations kind of gang up on him and before you know it, his career is ended.
What would be unreasonable for you then?
Well, I think if FIFA kicked him out or banned him for, let's say, 6 months, if Champions League banned him for 6 months, which would in essence take him out of the entire Champions League, Serie A banned him for, you know, multiple bannings. I think this is something that could be handled where it can be handled behind closed doors in terms of a meeting between the heads of FIFA, UEFA, the Serie A, even the Juventus. Because I would imagine Juventus wants to suspend him as well. Allegri kind of alluded to that fact. But I think they should come up with a number of time, and then they should apply that number publicly in one swoop. And for me, I think the number should be 2 months, where Douglas Costa is suspended from all football activity, so no practice, no participation, no games, no nothing, for 2 months. And then on December 15th, you can come back to the Allianz, you can come back to Juventus, and then pick up where we've left off and see if they can integrate you. That's kind of mine. And Rob, you know, I just want to throw it to you real quick. You're kind of the same ilk, right?
I agree. I think anything beyond what we had mentioned into the 1-2 months suspension that we talked about would be too much.
Yeah. So, Oliver, given that to you, where do you feel the suspensions should lie?
Well, I've got to be completely honest with you, Joe. I completely agree, and I think the precedent has almost been set here in England a couple of years ago. It's a slightly different incident, but when Luis Suarez, you know, first bit Patrice Evra, I think it was the same type of shocking incident when it happened. I think it was the type of thing that made everyone sit up and look, and they couldn't really believe what had happened. And I think originally you had that outcry, and there were the people saying, like you said, 6 months and things. But I think, I believe, as far as I'm aware, Suarez got 8 games. I think that kind of works out normally in football at around 2 months. And I think that's a completely fair punishment for Douglas Costa. I was shocked to see what, because I wasn't watching the game. I was watching the Wolves against Burnley game here on the Sunday. And I saw the spitting incident, but to find out how else he'd acted throughout the game, I was genuinely shocked, because I didn't really think Douglas Costa was able to lose it in such a way. So I think he needs a spell of rehabilitation. I think he needs to be looked after, because what he's done is completely out of order. But I would go as far to say it's almost uncharacteristic. So I think a 2-game, as you said, a complete ban, no training. Get some people around him, and he needs to make an example of him to make sure young people know that this is unacceptable. But I would say that, you know, a 2-month, 10-game ban is, you know, harsh enough punishment, certainly.
Yeah, definitely. I think Joe and I can agree with that. And of course, Joe, being a Juventino as well, could definitely agree that punishment would be better served, you know, just to, you know, understand, you know, and really get what he did. So I completely agree with you, Oliver. But now, looking into a tournament that starts tomorrow, obviously we'll mention Juventus a bit later, but obviously we have the Champions League starting tomorrow. Obviously, I think for a lot of people, this has got to be one of the most open Champions League in a long time. Currently looking at the bookings right now of top favorites, you have Manchester City at 9-2, you have Barcelona 6-1, Juventus 13-2, PSG 15-2, and the reigning European champions, the reigning three-time European champions, Real Madrid at 8-1. Oliver, going forward to this, obviously you look at other teams straightening. You obviously look at Barcelona becoming one of the favorites, City with their remarkable season that they had in the Premier League with Guardiola being much more stronger than ever before. Juventus, obviously, we mentioned them getting Ronaldo. PSG, you know, with players like Neymar and Mbappe. Real Madrid obviously being as strong as they ever have been as well. Do you feel that top five is well suited as, you know, those top favorites for the Champions League? Do you feel that maybe in the case of City, it's too high to put them up as the top favorite to win the Champions League? I just want your thoughts on this whole overall winner odds for the Champions League.
I mean, I think it's fascinating that Real Madrid can win it so many times in succession, yet not be the favourites. I mean, for me, they're going to be up there. But in terms of Manchester City, they are an incredibly interesting proposition for this season, because they've won the league in such a way that has never been done in the Premier League before. But it's all about the Champions League. It's all about that. That's why Guardiola's there. And obviously, it's about winning that this year. I wouldn't have them as favourites, personally. I'd still technically have Real Madrid, because I think it's hard to look past them. They've obviously had a fairly decent start to the season. They would have liked to have picked 3 points up at the weekend, but they didn't. But I think you're right. It's incredibly open. But a team like Manchester City, I think, it's them and PSG. This is their year. This is the year they have to capitalize on the foundations that have been laying for the last couple of years. There's an incredible amount of pressure on both teams. You may not really see it because they're obviously favorites to win their league, but I think certainly when it comes to PSG, I mean, you know, they have such a star-studded lineup. We all know about this, but when it comes to winning what is the main goal, which it's both for both of these teams, they are both going for the Champions League this year. I think PSG will certainly think that winning the Ligue 1 will be a foregone conclusion. I think Manchester City will probably be right in thinking that the Premier League is going to be coming back to them, and it's up to them to win it again. But it really is time for those two teams to step up in the Champions League, and that's why I think it's so fascinating that they're both going to be in action this week, and especially with Paris Saint-Germain, you know, travelling to Liverpool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But now looking at the city real quick, you know, there's obviously been the case of, you know, I think for now, ever since Guardiola came to Manchester City, of that big priority to obviously win the Champions League instead of any domestic titles like the FA Cup, Carabao Cup and Premier League. Is this a case that with Manchester City, are they really focusing on into more just winning the Champions League rather than all the other titles? Or is this a case that, you know, with the expectation that Manchester City has had for quite some time is to win every possible trophy there is, which one of them do you feel that is more suited to Manchester City's ambitions for this season?
Yeah, no, 100% Champions League. This is the year. That's what I was just trying to say. I think it's all about the Champions League. I think the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup will be completely bypassed. Of course, they will want to win the Premier League. I think that they will struggle to win the Premier League, in my personal opinion, this season, because I feel as though Liverpool have understood that perhaps winning the Premier League may be a more realistic opportunity this year, having just missed out on the Champions League last year. So for Manchester City, I think they're going to focus more on the Champions League. And it's mainly through the kudos that you get from winning the most elite competition at club level. That's what it's all about to Manchester City. They've obviously never done it. They want to do it. And in order for them to cement themselves as one of the best clubs across Europe and across the world, of course, because obviously winning the Champions League, you're playing the Club World Cup. It's very important for them that they reach this elite level. So for them, I'm certain that it's all about the Champions League this year.
Now, Oliver, you know, sticking with City, obviously they open with probably their toughest match in their group stage, which they're going to open against Lyon, a team that's pretty dynamic with Nabil Fekir and Memphis Depay. Losing Mariano Diaz in the transfer window this season, but still quite the dynamic team. And this team has actually opened with quite the defensive display in Ligue 1. I've only conceded 4 goals so far this season, which is tops of the Ligue 1. Also, City have to deal with Hoffenheim and Shakhtar Donetsk, which is very difficult to go into the Ukraine and win a match. So what are your expectations of City? I mean, will they just totally run through this group without blinking an eye? Or do you feel that there are some stumbling points that can cause concern?
I think you've got to look at last season and the way Manchester City performed. I think there at times was a sense of complacency. I think they played FC Basel at home and they lost. And they also obviously lost both games in the knockout stages against Liverpool. I think Manchester City are at their best when you saw them play against Napoli. And I think they're particularly good during the group stage because the games haven't begun to pile up as yet. You know, Kevin De Bruyne is out, but it hasn't mattered because it's not been the Saturday, Tuesday that everyone complains about with the intense workload in the Premier League. I think at the moment, I don't see them having many problems with this group stage. I agree, Lyon is a very difficult task, but they are at home on Wednesday evening. So it's always good to be at home in the first game because you're always expected to win. You'll probably have 3 points, then you can build on from that. And obviously Shakhtar, they're in a very, very difficult proposition. But obviously, you know, they have their own certain problems with everything that's going on over there. And it's always a bit up in the air when you head over there. I mean, I don't see personally Manchester City having any problem topping this group. I don't think they'll win every game. It's particularly going to Shakhtar, I think they will struggle. I think they'll probably pick up a draw, but I think they'll be fine. But it's just going to be the latter stages, because by the time the latter stages kick in, that's when you've already been involved heavily in the Carabao Cup. It's around the time of the final, and the FA Cup will have already begun. So that's when I think it will begin to strain on the squad.
Definitely. Let's look across the street to the red side of Manchester and Manchester United. Obviously, they're in what many would consider a difficult group, Group H, along with the second co-choice in Juventus, as well as a quality side in Valencia and the newcomers and young boys in Group H. Mm-hmm. What's your perspective on Manchester United getting out of this group? I think they should, let me put it to you that way, but I think Valencia might be a bigger challenge for them than most. I think Juventus will probably run top of this group, and I know I'm being a little bit of a homer there, but at the same time, there's just way too much quality on that side, for them not to. So I think For me, Manchester United will come in second, but I think it is certainly challenging when they're going to have to go to Valencia and play there. What are your thoughts on United?
Well, firstly, I completely agree with you. I think Juventus will top the group, but I think Manchester United will come second. However, I think last season showed when the game against Seville came up, and obviously they lost, that there is a lot of pressure stemming from that game. That was the catapult in terms of it created this pressure cooker at Old Trafford. And ever since that game, there has been such a... the pressure around Jose Mourinho has been unbelievable. So he needs to get 3 points without doubt away at Young Boys on Wednesday night. And it's similar to City in the fact that you start with 3 points and then you can build from that. If they struggle in that first game, their backs will be completely up against it, because there will already be a massive media circus around the Juventus game with Pogba returning and Ronaldo returning to respective sides. Valencia really, really should not be underestimated. And I know for a fact that Jose Mourinho and his surly nature will know that they cannot be underestimated. But it's imperative for Manchester United to start strongly on Wednesday, get the 3 points, and then build from that. But I do think they'll progress. I don't think it will be particularly pretty. I think there'll be a couple of nil-nils in there. But I think Jose Mourinho has shown already in the league this season that he's come back from a bit of adversity. And, you know, Manchester United are looking a lot better than they did, say, a couple of weeks ago after the Brighton game.
You know, just to stay on United for a second, obviously currently eighth in the in this young season in the EPL. You know, and many rumors around Jose Mourinho, his, you know, the way he plays, the style of play that he puts out there. Many people look at Paul Pogba and say, well, he was so great in the World Cup. Why can't he be so great at Manchester United? And I think sometimes some people put that on Paul Pogba. Sometimes people put that on Mourinho and his style. So when you look at it, especially with the pressure that Manchester United is always under, you know, with Sir Alex, you know, watching from above in the box, do you feel that a poor showing in the first two or three matches here in the Champions League could... You know, coupled with maybe a poor showing right now, I mean, eighth place is certainly not Manchester United's preferred position on the table. Is this something that you could really start to see the buzzards circling for Mourinho?
Yeah, definitely, because Manchester United is, it's almost like a paradox at the moment, because they're living off their name, they're living off the past, but Jose Mourinho is doing the best out of any manager since Sir Alex Ferguson. So that needs to be respected. I think the problem is he isn't Sir Alex Ferguson. He isn't having the success as Sir Alex Ferguson. And because he obviously hasn't built his legacy up, then any defeat is scrutinised. And it's because they've had so many unsuccessful years under Louis van Gaal and obviously David Moyes before that. So what it means is that, like I said, with the Seville game, it creates this pressure. And it's only there because of the name of Manchester United. Manchester United still, despite having 6 years now where they haven't, you know, performed at their best, they are still arguably, and I would say probably, the biggest club in world football, despite having, you know, in that time, you know, won the Europa League effectively. They haven't won the Premier League. They haven't won the Champions League. That's not what Manchester United used to. So they're living off this name. And obviously the fans, the media, everyone associated in football expects a Manchester United. And I think, you know, Jose Mourinho has brought that back up a little bit, finishing second last season, like I said, winning a couple of cup competitions. So now, they struggle for a couple of games. So it's time now for them to really begin to push on. I don't think they will be challenging for the Premier League this year. So they're another team that are in this situation where they want to appeal on all fronts in the typical Manchester United way. But it's very important for them that, you know, they don't fall into the Europa League again, because if they do, I don't see Jose Mourinho being able to stay at the club for much longer.
I agree completely. Let's move over to Liverpool quickly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, runners-up from last year's Champions League. They open this tournament, which is, I think, probably the best match of the week, with favorites in PSG. I believe PSG is the fourth choice right now in the bookies to win this whole tournament. PSG also come into this tournament feeling that they underperformed last year, especially with the side they've got. Now, Liverpool is also much improved off of that Champions League final run with the additions of Naby Keita and Alisson. You're looking at two teams that right now are perfect on their seasons so far. Can Liverpool return back to the Champions League final? Can they even beat PSG this week? And what are your keys to this particular group that is so difficult, especially knowing that Napoli also lingers in the distance as well?
I mean, it's a brilliant game. You're right. It's certainly the pick of the games this week. Just quickly, Liverpool against Napoli, they beat them quite comfortably in pre-season. I know you can't look too much into it, but certainly that's a bit of a confidence builder by the time you do head into those games. I think both teams of Liverpool and PSG this year, they've both, you know, won every game in their domestic competition so far this season. It will be the game that will tell Liverpool where they are at as a club side, because during their run in the Champions League last year, with respect to the teams that they played, they didn't really play the top echelon, so to speak. So I think it'll be very interesting when they come up against the PSG side. I had a little look and PSG didn't play Mbappe. There was no Neymar at the weekend. So it's a case of, for Liverpool, like I've said, there's been a lot of talk in England over the last couple of weeks that Liverpool will focus more on the Premier League, because I think the general consensus here is that they got, not lucky, but, you know, they rode their luck a little bit to get, as every team would do, to get to the final in the Champions League. And their squad has developed in such a way that they're more suited to the Premier League this year. By all means, Liverpool could quite happily upset the apple cart and progress quite far in the Champions League this year. But I think this is the perfect game for them, being at Anfield, under the lights. It's a special, special atmosphere in the Champions League when they play against a top team like PSG. So I think, like I said, this will be the time where Liverpool will be able to know come Wednesday morning just how good they really are when it comes to playing against the best.
Certainly. And this, and I'm going to close out with a move to Group B, but if you thought Group C was a difficult group, Group B may certainly be the group of death with Spurs, Inter, PSV, and Barcelona. And Spurs have an enormous challenge for me. They're obviously coming off of two straight losses in the Premier League. They have to travel to the San Siro for a match tomorrow against Inter, a club that's won this competition three times, but not since 2010 under Jose Mourinho. And they haven't competed in this competition since the 2011-2012 season. Inter's also a team that did a lot of smart spending in this transfer window and really seemed poised to rise back to stardom that they were used to back in the 90s and even into the early 2000s. Spurs, of course, were very successful last year in the Champions League, losing out to Juventus, in the knockout stages. Mm-hmm. But with having this recent run of poor form, also we get word that Dele Alli will be out of this match. Kieran Trippier, I believe there is one other person who is escaping me right now. Toby Alderweireld will also not be playing in this match tomorrow. Some big losses. How do you think they're going to fare tomorrow at the San Siro? And how do you think they will fare overall given this really, really difficult group?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously the two latest names. It obviously joins Hugo Lloris and Dele Alli. Spurs are certainly up against it. They didn't lose back-to-back games in the Premier League the whole of last season. And then having won 3-0 at Old Trafford, that's now what they've done in the Premier League this season. It's typical Spurs. It's up and down. It always is. But then again, last year in the Champions League, they were in the so-called group of death last year with Dortmund and Real Madrid, and they progressed through that. It's always a difficult game. I mean, there was, you know, I think a game, I think it was 2010 when Gareth Bale scored a hat-trick in the San Siro. It stays in everyone's mind if you're a certain age here in England, because it was such a special tie. I think you just felt like Spurs were so up against it when they went over to Italy, and I think obviously it's when Inter Milan were a bit better than they are now with respect, that you're kind of looking at Spurs being up against the wall again, but I think they're going to take some solace that Inter Milan are 15th in the league this season. They've had a bit of a difficult start to the campaign. I know Spurs haven't had the best start either themselves, but they're still in the top six. The game that I look at as the biggest problem is probably PSV Eindhoven, because all the attention will be on Inter Milan and Barcelona. But it only just shows that it was only Manchester United a couple of seasons ago when they went to PSV Eindhoven. They really struggled in the game when Luke Shaw had that horrific leg break. So sometimes you underestimate clubs like that. You know, that PSV have won every game so far in the Dutch league this season. And, you almost take your eye off the ball, so to speak. I've got to say that I just think Spurs have the ability to surprise you. You would expect them to, for me personally, finish third in this group. I think Inter Milan or PSV could finish runner-up to Barcelona, who have obviously, as always, started the season on fire, won all four games, come from behind to win at the weekend, showing their resolve. Spurs are a funny old team, and I think it just has to show what they did last year in the Champions League, that they could surprise a few people, and I wouldn't even be that surprised if they got a really positive result in the San Siro tomorrow.
Now, what do you make of the matchup between two of the top, I would say, five or six strikers in the world in Harry Kane and Mauro Icardi?
Fantastic. I think Mauro Icardi is probably one of the most underrated strikers in England that it could be possible, because, you know, you don't necessarily see, because he doesn't go to the World Cup, and for certain fans that's a big barometer over here. And then you've got Harry Kane on the other side, who's winning the Golden Boot with a couple of penalties. I just think that it's going to be a fascinating matchup, specifically because of the form that Kane is in at the moment. There's been some stats released over here that just basically show that Kane scores because he has the most shots. And that's nothing against him. I'm not saying that's a negative thing. But it just basically says that the Spurs midfield and the rest of the players haven't been providing him with the opportunities to score. So that's kind of been the problem in the last couple of games of them losing, is they haven't been able to get the ball to Harry Kane. They're both excellent finishers. I'd probably go as far to say that I kind of prefer Icardi as a striker. I think he just offers a little bit more, but you know, you can't argue with Harry Kane. There's been so much talked about him over the last couple of years. Oh, he's a one-season wonder, then he's a two-season wonder, then he's a three-season wonder. I just think that it will be a really, really good matchup, because you love seeing the best players come up against each other, and they're two proper strikers in the form of being, you know, a bit taller, over certainly 5'11". They've got a bit about them, and they can run in behind as well. So I think it'll be a really good matchup between the two.
Certainly going to be fun to watch, no doubt about that. Before we let you go, where can we find the Football 90 podcast?
So the Football 90 podcast, we're a new podcast. We've only just started this season. We're on iTunes. We're also on SoundCloud, and we're on all good other podcast providers. So it's the Football 90 podcast. And a new episode came out today. They come out every Monday, apart from when there's an international week, because we don't really do one. But there will be one next Monday. So please check it out if you can. All feedback is more than welcome.
Fantastic. And that's at 90_footy to follow them on Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah.
Oliver, thank you for joining us tonight on the show and talking about the Champions League. We are all very excited that it kicks off tomorrow. And we look forward to having you back again on the show very, very soon.
Thank you ever so much, guys. Take care.
Cheers. Thank you so much.
And that was Oliver Stevenson from the 90 Football Podcast. I'm sorry, the Football 90 Podcast, and also producer on Talk Sport. Great to get to chat with him for once. So we really enjoyed it, and again, can't wait to have him back. So, Rob, let's look at a couple other things that have happened. Obviously, with the Champions League coming up this week, there's enough to be said about that. Very excited for that. Let's bring it over across the pond and back here to the United States. Obviously, I alluded in the monologue, Zlatan Ibrahimovic scores his 500th goal, which, wow, Rob, maybe goal of the year?
I think a little Dmitry Payet, who scored over the weekend as well, has something to say about that.
I'm sure. Yeah, we saw some magnificent goals, but Zlatan Ibrahimovic becomes the third player, the third active player right now to score 500 goals. The other two, obviously, being Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. But he does it with this roundhouse scorpion kick that was, karate-esque. And it was just absolutely fantastic. Now, obviously, there's the extracurriculars with Michael Bradley toward the end of the match where they were jawing at each other. You know, we get all of that. But for me, I'd rather focus on the goal because the goal was unbelievable, Rob. Where does this rank for you in Ibra goals? Because, I mean, he's scored some magnificent ones over there. Even his first goal in MLS at the beginning of the season was phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, where does this rank?
Oof, tough to say. I mean, it's definitely not number one. I think number one has to be the bicycle kick against England.
Oh, yes.
I think that one has to be number one. The goal where he dribbled the past 5-6 defenders at Ajax has to go in there. Mm-hmm. The backheel shot.
There was the one in World Cup qualifying too.
It was against Italy. Yes. The one against Italy.
Yeah,
it was in the Euros, I think. I don't know. Probably not top five, unfortunately. I think I've seen obviously there's 500 of them to pick, so it's hard to say really. But for me, I wouldn't put in the goal in the top five. I think it was wonderful, but I just feel that there were probably some other ones out there and I already named three off the top of my mind that were better.
It also goes to show you just the goals that the man scores. I mean, there's nothing boring about what he does. Whether it be out in life or on the pitch, there's nothing boring about what Zlatan Ibrahimovic does in his day in day out life. It's amazing to see. So, obviously, stay tuned because they are still fighting. If you really look back at the LA Galaxy, and I guess we'll take a quick second here to look at that because we're getting close here. LA Galaxy is still fighting for that playoff spot. They currently sit, just looking here, they currently sit eighth. In the Western Conference, they are 6 points back of Portland and Seattle, who hold the last two playoff spots. So they've got some work to do here, especially when they've got about, just doing the quick math, I believe 5 matches to go. And they're losers of 3 of their last 5, including losing to Toronto 5-3 on the weekend. So, the magnificent goal, but it's kind of overshadowed by their struggles so far this year. Siggy Schmidt stepped down a couple weeks ago. We talked about that last week. This is kind of going to be the one of the bright spots in the season with his 500th goal and a historic goal at that. But it may get overshadowed by, how the team finishes. And then you have to wonder, Rob, does he stick around? How much longer does he stick around in MLS given the struggles, right?
So, absolutely.
So let's move on to something else. And let's reflect back, Rob, on the international break because – if the back and forth between Michael Bradley and Zlatan Ibrahimovic wasn't enough on the weekend, we're going to just go back a little bit further to the U.S.-Mexico matchup. The USA wins 1-0 on a Tyler Adams goal, his first international goal. Rob, you and I both watched this match. This match in the first half was a complete snooze fest. There was nothing redeeming about this match. And it's unfortunate because it was full of a lot of the kids, but obviously the venom got brought into this one in the second half with Matt Miazga kind of showing up and making fun of Diego Lainez, who had a pretty good game, making fun of his height. Now, Miazga, I believe, is 6'3", 6'4". He's very tall, 6'4", where Lainez is 5'5". And it initiates with them both going for a ball, and Miazga does a great job of shielding Lainez off, using his body and physically just shielding him off the ball and then playing the ball out. But in the meantime, Lainez is taking some hacks at him at his ankles, almost like a little dog kind of, biting at his heels. And they get in each other's face, and then Miazga makes this motion to Lainez that, hey, you're short, buddy, And he kind of continues to make fun of him. Now, this one, I think everyone's on the same side in the Diego Costa one, but I think this one has much more separation to it, Rob. For me, I don't care. It was trash talking. It was on the pitch. This is heat of the moment. This is where we can talk about heat of the moment. But I've seen everything from this is a non-story to this was racist. And for me, boy, that's a reach to say racist. I mean, this is kind of where you and I went. I said, I'm average at 5'7", and you're like, no, average is 5'10". I'm like, all right, well, then I'm short, and Miazga's making fun of me. I wouldn't have taken that as an insult. You know, and you look back to other quote-unquote famous short players, you know, none other than Lionel Messi. I mean, I don't think Miazga looks at Messi and goes, oh, you're short, buddy, you're short, right? I mean, you know, because then Messi just dances around him with the ball, and then he makes him feel humble.
Exactly.
You know, so I think people that went to say that this was a racist remark, you know, that kind of thing, I think really were off the deep end on this one.
Overreaction at its highest level.
Amen. But and you know, all of a sudden, and the other reaction that I saw, Rob, were people that were saying, "Oh, you know, Americans are like this. Americans are rude." You know, I've seen those, and to those people,
everyone is at fault of this, not just us.
You know, but that's my thing. At that point, I would say, what about when they're taking a corner kick in the Azteca, and you're getting bags of piss thrown on you?
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. That's not rude, really. But this is being a rude American. Are you kidding me? Stop. Go home. Delete your Twitter account. You know, that's seriously what needs to happen there. So for me, Miazga's it's just trash talking. It's on the pitch. I'll go even with heat of the moment if you felt that it was slightly over the top. But to call it rude, to call it inconsiderate, to call it racist, I think is ridiculous. I mean, what do you think, Rob?
I mean, I'll actually go to Diego Lainez's side since I'm a short person myself. I'm actually his height. No, I mean, it's certainly not something to really overreact. I think, you know, we have to also look at, you know, Miazga is not only taller, he's also 5 years older than him.
Right.
So yeah, that's another thing as well.
That's another thing, too. I mean, and you know, think about it. Could it have just been Miazga trying to get under his skin?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was much more than that. And like I said, the kid had a great game.
Right.
You know, Lainez played really, really well. Was one of the brighter spots for the Mexican national team in this matchup, but I think it was ridiculous. And then obviously, then it goes a step further to Zaldívar, who then creates, you know, causes that huge foul that resulted in the red card. And I want to ask you about that just real quick on this one, Rob, because for me it is a little reckless. But unfortunately for Zaldívar, it's where his foot lands on top of the ball that causes his foot to kind of come up and then hit Will Trapp like that. And I think, I'm not saying that the red card was completely harsh, but I think it was, I don't think people would have argued or really gotten out of shape if it was a yellow. You know, what are your thoughts on that foul?
Yeah, I think it should have been, I have no idea, to be honest. I don't think it should have been that bad as well. I really don't know. I can't remember the foul either, so I would have to look back. But, you know, certainly this is not something that kind of was a bit harsh in the end.
That's what I thought as well. I thought it was a little bit of a harsh foul. I mean, it was an aggressive foul. It was a little reckless, but I don't think there was any intent to cause injury there. And right. And I think because of that, I think a yellow would have been warranted, but the referee saw fit to give a red card, giving the man advantage to the United States, and then in the end leading to the Tyler Adams goal and a 1-0 victory in Nashville on Tuesday night. So, and again, it's a friendly, but it was good to see the kids. But I go back to Eric Winalda's talk with us last week. You know, what are we doing as a federation? These kids, weren't there points, Rob, in this match where you felt there was almost no direction? There was no cohesiveness. And I don't know if that was a product of the formation. I don't know if it was a product of the kids. I don't know if it was a product of Dave Sarakin. But, you know, sometimes you want to look at these kids and go, you know, they're really not playing for this guy in Sarakin. And I feel bad for Sarakin because, you know, he's a good coach. I don't think he's a terrible coach. But I think right now he's getting a bad look because of the way the team is playing around him. And we'll have to see, you know, what it means for Sarakin in the future and when the United States will finally come up with their plan to give us a head coach.
So, 100% agree.
Yeah. Let's, you know, before we get to the trivia answer, Rob, we've got a lot of matches to watch this week, man.
So
if you want to give us the rundown, that would be great.
Absolutely. Let's go in order by dates. We'll go start in the Champions League with four interesting matches, some of them that were alluded, obviously, during our conversation with Oliver. We have Inter taking on Tottenham Hotspur Tuesday at 12:55 p.m. We have a new kickoff time, Joe. I don't know if you realize that.
It's kind of a little bit of a Europa flavor to it, right? Because with Europa, you get so many teams playing, and they're playing all the way into Russia that the time zones are so different that you do get those 12 o'clock starts over in the Ukraine and into the Russian matches. So kind of refreshing, if you ask me.
Absolutely. You have that tomorrow at 12:55 p.m. Also, the big game, I think, on Tuesday, well, tomorrow in this case, is Liverpool against PSG at 3 p.m. On Wednesday, we have Manchester City taking on Lyon at 3 p.m., as well as Real Madrid against Roma at the same day. In the Europa League, we have Marseille taking on Eintracht Frankfurt at 12:55 p.m. We also have Leipzig play Red Bull Salzburg in the Red Bull Derby at 3 p.m. Switching to league action real quick, we have Schalke taking on Bayern Saturday at 12:30 p.m. In Serie A, we have Sampdoria taking on Inter Saturday at 2:30 p.m. In MLS, we have Atlanta United taking on Real Salt Lake Saturday at 7 p.m. On Sunday, we have Arsenal taking on Everton at 11 a.m. We have Real Betis taking on Athletic Bilbao at 12:30 p.m. And to wrap it off, we have Lyon taking on Marseille at 3 p.m.
You know, for the league matches, I've got to think that that Lyon-Marseille one is probably the one to watch in terms of league. But if we go to Champions League, Liverpool-PSG, right?
Absolutely, yeah, 100%.
That's definitely
gonna Although be- that Real Madrid-Roma one looks really good, too.
That does look tasty, especially, well, you know, and Roma are not exactly on the greatest of form right now, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they handle Champions League, because you saw what they did last year with Barca, you know, and they almost unseated Liverpool going into the finals. So going to be interesting to see how DeFrancisco has this team geared up, especially with no Nainggolan this year, you know, how they manage to move forward. So
definitely.
Let's get the trivia question again, and I'll give you the names that I have written down, and we'll see if any of them are even close.
Okay, so the trivia question was, Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo both hold the record of the most goals scored by a player in the Champions League group stage. Only out of these two players, completing the top four, there have been two other players to have reached that mark. Name them.
Okay. I wrote four names down. I know we need two players, but I wrote four names down. I'm going to give you the four names, and you can tell me if I have any of them, okay?
Got it.
So this way you're not telling me who it is. I have David Beckham, Zinedine Zidane, Ronaldinho, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Do I have any of the two names?
No.
I'm screwed. So Messi, Ronaldo, and then it's two more names. And you said these players – oh, actually, you said these players don't play anymore.
Nope, they retired a couple years ago.
So Ibra is definitely out of that. What about Frank Lampard?
Nope.
Oof. Oh, boy.
I'll give you a few hints. They all played at Real Madrid. They both played at Real Madrid at one point of their careers. Strikers
at Real Madrid. Hold on a second. No, because Fernando Torres never played there. Hold on.
Nope.
That's wrong Madrid side. oh, my God. I can't believe I'm totally missing this. Because Luis Figo would have been Luis. No, Luis Figo played around Madrid.
He did, but he's not on that list as well. He's a Spanish striker. One of the best Spanish strikers of all time.
Well, it's certainly not David Villa.
Nope.
God, Spanish striker. Best Spanish striker of all time. No longer plays.
Raul? Raul. That's him. Number 53 goals. Raul has 53 goals. He is third all time of most goals in the group stage.
Okay, I can't believe it took.
Give you one more.
All right.
Dutch.
Oh my God.
Played at Manchester United as well.
Yeah. It's Oh, Jesus, this is not Van Persie. It's
You're close. Very close.
Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Ruud van Nistelrooy with 50 goals. So the top four is at stands. Lionel Messi, who has the advantage, actually, tomorrow, to go at 61 and be the all-time top goal scorer in group stage history. Cristiano Ronaldo with 60, Raul with 53, and Ruud van Nistelrooy with 50 group stage goals in the Champions League.
Fantastic. Great question. So let's see here. I'm going to just go ahead and open up one more thing, but I believe, my friend, that that's the list for tonight, right?
Yes, it is.
So, you know what? One thing we should do before we before we move on, with the Champions League starting tomorrow, do you want to pick a winner of the Champions League?
Yeah, why not?
Who do you got?
Barcelona.
I'll take Juventus. I'm gonna be a homer. I'm gonna hope that my team gets there this time. So, all right, man. Without any further ado, the closing music. And there we go. So, for episode 217 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Oliver Stevenson from Talk Sport and Football 90 Podcast for joining us. Next week, we will be back with more Champions League coverage, Europa League coverage, and we will dive back into the league action. We'll probably update where everyone stands so far about a third of the way through this, or at least a quarter of the way through the season. So, for episode 217 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.